Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
Good Friday morning. It's Vanessa Denha Garmo filling in for my dear sister in Christ this morning, Teresa Tomeo. I call myself a chief communications officer and communications evangelist in the work that I do in professional development training and leadership development coaching with Epiphany Communications, also host of Epiphany on the EWTN affiliate, Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan. We have a packed hour this morning and so happy to be with all of you here today. Doug Keck is going to be joining us as we commemorate the 10-year anniversary of the foundress, Mother Angelica. Love her, love her, love her. I watch her and I crack up. She cracks me up and she's so, I love her little clips that EWTN posts on social media all the time. I'm constantly quoting her on my radio program. I think almost daily I pull a quote from Mother Angelica. I adore her and I love that we're having special programming today. And Doug Keck will fill us in on all of that here this morning. Zach Dotson will be with us from the National Eucharistic Pilgrimage. And then Kimberly Bird will be talking about live action monthly update with us as well. Now, today on the liturgical calendar for the Chaldean Rite, I'm Chaldean, so I'm Catholic from Iraq. My parents emigrated in the 1950s. And I used Father Robert Spitzer's Magis AI to get some information on what's called Lazarus Friday. So we, in the Chaldean Rite, in our liturgical calendar, this is on our calendar. We acknowledge this day. It is a special day for us on the calendar. So in the Chaldean Church calendar, Lazarus Friday is observed to commemorate the raising of Lazarus from the dead by Jesus as narrated in the Gospel of John. This event is of profound significance as it reflects Jesus' divine power over death and foreshadows his own passion, death, and resurrection. The miracle of Lazarus is not simply a demonstration of power, but the initiation of Jesus's glory, his total self-gift of love, culminating in the cross, which grants liberation from spiritual death and invites believers to live as children of God in the light of divine love and grace. The liturgical observance of Lazarus Friday, the Chaldean tradition, serves as spiritual preparation for Holy Week, whereas some traditions celebrate Lazarus Saturday. The Chaldean Church places this commemoration on Friday, focusing contemplatively on Jesus' empathetic love, his weeping over death, and the ultimate freedom he offers through resurrection. The removal of the stone from Lazarus' tomb and Jesus' command to unbind him and let him go symbolize spiritual liberation rather than mere physical revival. This sets the tone for the unfolding events of Holy Week. Jesus' triumphant entry into Jerusalem, his passion, death, and hope of the resurrection. The observance fits the Holy Week by leading the faithful through a profound meditation on Jesus as a resurrection and the life, highlighting themes of trust, love, and hope. It invites the faithful to enter more deeply into the mystery of Christ's passion, seeing in Lazarus' resurrection a sign of the new life to come through Jesus' own resurrection. The event thus both anticipates and contextualizes the liturgical celebration of Palm Sunday through Easter Sunday that follows. This is from Magis AI. It is on the liturgical calendar for the Chaldean Rite, Lazarus Friday. So I just wanted to share that with all of you today. I love Father Robert Spitzer's Magis AI. It's come in very handy for me as I plug in different things about the Catechism of the Catholic Church and our faith and the teachings of the church. And I really encourage you to check it out. It is 4 minutes past the hour here on Catholic Connection, and that means it's time for the news on EWTN. And we're going to start this newscast with a weather update with Chris Powers.
Warm and quiet conditions settle across much of the central and eastern United States today, with above average temperatures stretching from the plains to the east coast. The Southeast enjoys sunshine and mild air, with Atlanta climbing into the low 70s and Miami nearing 80. Along the East Coast, partly sunny skies pushed New York and Boston into the upper 50s this afternoon. Across the Midwest, clouds mix with sunshine as temperatures remain near seasonal levels. Chicago reaches the mid-40s, while Minneapolis stays cooler under lingering cloud cover. The plains remain mostly dry with light winds and intervals of sunshine. Out west, a more active pattern develops. The Pacific Northwest sees periods of rain and highs in the 50s, while Northern California picks up scattered showers. Southern California stays mostly dry with mild conditions. Mountain areas in the Rockies may see light snow as cooler air moves through the region. That's your national forecast. I'm Chris Powers.
A landmark verdict in Los Angeles today could reshape the future of social media regulations. A jury has found Meta and YouTube liable for creating platforms that contribute to harmful and addictive behavior in young users. This from CBS News. The case was brought by a woman identified as KGM, who said years of using Instagram and YouTube as a child fueled depression, body image issues, and suicidal thoughts. Jurors agreed awarding her $3 million in compensation. Compensatory damages and another $3 million in punitive damages. Meta is responsible for 70% of the judgment, YouTube for 30%. The jury ruled the companies were negligent in how they designed their platform and failed to warn families about potential risk to minors. They also found the companies acted with malice or oppression, noting internal awareness of possible harm. Both Meta and Google say they will appeal, arguing the verdict misrepresents their platforms and that teen mental health is far more complex than any single app. Legal experts say this decision could open the door to thousands of similar lawsuits nationwide. The partial government shutdown could end soon, Perry Williams reports.
Overnight, the Senate passed a bill to fund most of Homeland Security, including the Transportation Security Administration. This air traveler at O'Hare Airport supports TSA agents who have gone weeks without pay.
It's the end of the day. Everybody needs to travel, and the people that work here at the airport should be taken care of, right? Because that's their job, and they shouldn't be put in the middle of a political situation.
The bill, which now goes to the House, would provide funding for all of DHS agencies except for ICE and Border Patrol. I'm Perry Williams.
President Trump is giving Iran another 10 days until April 6th to reopen the Strait of Hormuz or face an attack on its energy infrastructure. Ross Cullen reports Trump says talks with Iran are going very well, although Iran's leadership has rejected a 15-point U.S. proposal to end the war.
Iran has not confirmed publicly that it is in direct negotiations with the United States, but it's understood that back-channel talks are being held between Washington and Tehran, with various countries involved in conveying messages back and forth, including Egypt, Pakistan, and Turkey.
White House envoy Steve Witkoff says during a cabinet meeting yesterday that those countries have agreed to mediate talks between the U.S. and Iran and have asked Tehran for a high-level meeting. Witkoff says there are strong signs that Tehran was ready to negotiate. Cullen reports the U.S. is keeping its options open.
According to reports in the Wall Street Journal, Donald Trump is considering sending another 10,000 ground troops to the Middle East ahead of a possible incursion into Iran, on top of the more than 3,000 soldiers already on their way to the Gulf.
EWTN News reports that in Finland, a parliamentarian has been convicted by the Supreme Court on one charge related to a 2004 pamphlet expressing her Christian views on marriage and sexual ethics. The 3-2 ruling cited insulting a group under Finland's criminal code on war crimes and crimes against humanity. She was acquitted of charges tied to her 2019 Bible verse tweet, which sparked a legal battle. She says she was shocked and profoundly disappointed and plans to appeal to the European Court of Human Rights. The case has drawn international attention. Critics call the conviction a threat to religious freedom and free speech. She insists the issues goes beyond her own rights, saying this is about every person's freedom to share their beliefs. The NYPD is prioritizing security around synagogues as Passover starts next week. Scott Pringle reports.
Police Commissioner Jessica Tisch told Jewish community leaders on Thursday that she has not seen a threat environment quite like this one in her 18 years in government.
These are perilous times, to be sure, and I know you feel the stress and the anxiety. I feel it too, but I also know that the NYPD is laser focused on keeping this city safe.
The NYPD is deploying counterterrorism teams and canine units to synagogues and has a network of cameras and sensors in place as part of Passover-related security. In New York, I'm Scott Pringle.
A group of exorcists is warning the Pope that Satanism is on the rise, Michael Kastner reports.
Officials with the International Association of Exorcists met with Pope Leo at the Vatican earlier this month on Friday the 13th and told the pontiff that thousands of exorcists are needed to tackle the rise in Satanism and dark magic. The group claimed that the spread of paganism and the occult was being fueled by social media and that there was a worldwide shortfall of about 2,000 exorcists. It called for every Catholic diocese to have at least one exorcist. The first ever pope to have been born in the United States is called the work of Catholic exorcists delicate but most necessary. I'm Michael Kastner.
You need to file an extension to avoid costly penalties if you can't get your taxes in on time. Jack Crumley explains.
Tax season is here, and if you need extra time to file, you have to ask for it. Chief Tax Information Officer at Jackson Hewitt, Mark Stieber, explains.
In our tax code, we have the ability to extend the filing deadline by 6 months, and a lot of states piggyback on that, and some have their own. But the reality is, all you have to do to extend your filing deadline is file your 4868 extension. You can do it electronically, you can mail it in.
He says asking for that extension does not mean you can extend the time to pay up if you owe money on your tax return.
But to be clear, the extension of time in the tax code is only to send in your paperwork. If you owe money, that money is due by April 15th. There's only an extension of time to send in your documents.
Stieber warns that if you file an extension and don't pay the money you owe, you risk being penalized and will wind up owing more to Uncle Sam. The tax filing deadline is Wednesday, April 15th at midnight.
The Vatican has announced that Venerable Archbishop Fulton J. Sheen will be beatified on Thursday, September 24, 2026, in St. Louis, Missouri. The Mass will be presided over by Cardinal Luis Antonio Tagle, representing Pope Leo XIV. Sheen was declared venerable in 2012 and recognized for a miracle in 2019, clearing the way for beatification. Born in El Paso, Illinois, in 1895, Sheen was ordained in 1919 and became one of the most influential Catholic voices in America media. His radio show, The Catholic Hour, reached millions, and his television series, Life is Worth Living, drew more than 30 million viewers. Known for his dynamic preaching and deep intellect, Sheen died in 1979 at the age of 84. Following the beatification, he'll be known as Blessed Fulton Sheen. The EW10 Global Catholic Network is commemorating the 10th anniversary of the death of its foundress, Mother Angelica, with a Mass at St. Peter's Basilica in Rome on today, March 27th. EWTN News reported that the Memorial Mass will be celebrated by Father Michael Baggett at the Basilica's choir altar at 11 o'clock today, Eastern Time, marking a decade since the death of the Poor Clare nun who founded what would become the world's largest Catholic media network. Mother Angelica loved the beauty and grandeur of St. Peter's Basilica and wanted only the best for her beloved Jesus Christ, said Michael P. Warsaw, EWTN Chair and CEO. It's fitting that we honor her memory and commitment to sharing truth, beauty, and goodness with the world at a place that points all people towards transcendence. It is 14 minutes past the hour here on Catholic Connection. I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo filling in for Teresa Tomeo. Stay with us. We're heading into break. We'll be right back after this. EWTN remembers Mother Angelica 10 years after her death. And to talk with us about that is Friday's guest, as always, the Inside Word at EWTN with Doug Keck. Doug, good morning. How are you?
Good. Good to be with you.
This is a wonderful day because I know it's going to be the programming today is going to be dedicated to Mother Angelica and a mass being celebrated in her honor in Rome. So tell us about what EWTN has planned for the day to remember Mother Angelica.
Well, I've got the mass, as you indicated, from Rome. We've also got the friars are doing the Stations of the Cross this afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern time from the chapel. So you want to check that out, of course. And we had a show on Wednesday that was dedicated to Mother Angelica. The EWTN Live program was dedicated to Mother Angelica. And, Father Mitch was there recollecting Mother Angelica, and Marcus Grodi and other people got an opportunity to talk about Mother and their interaction over the years. And then some of us got to make some comments that was aired as part of News Nightly over the last couple of days. And so there's been a lot of us kind of thinking about those days and how lucky we were to have the opportunity to work with somebody of the kind of spiritual power that was Mother Angelica.
I was telling you during the break, Doug, there were three people I really wish I had met during my lifetime who were alive in my lifetime: St. Pope John Paul II, St. Mother Teresa, and God willing, one day, St. Mother Angelica. I love her. I would love to have met her. And I think it's awesome that so many of you had the privilege of working with her. And you know what? Her personality is so infectious. I grew up watching her because my mom had EWTN on all the time. And she's so funny. Till today, you listen to her and you laugh out loud.
Well, I think that was the great gift that she had, the ability to relate to the average person in the pew and focused on and related to because of her own upbringing, etc. And you can read all about it, obviously, and raise books about Mother Angelica, the hardscrabble life that she had. So she related very much to people struggling, people who were dealing with the slings and arrows of life, and so she really related to those people well. And people like that, when you're dealing with tough times, you have to have a sense of humor. You need your faith and you need a sense of humor, because if you're going to march on, you have to always realize that you're going to be dealing with tough times. And if you get bogged down or you give yourself over to despair, which unfortunately I think a lot of younger people today seem to be doing because they don't have that faith aspect and maybe to some degree don't understand that, life is not perfect. It's not going to be perfect. And it's normal for all of us to suffer at some level. We all have a cross. They're all different. But we're given the graces to deal with it.
March is recognized annually as Women's History Month, a time dedicated to honoring the contributions, achievements, and history of women in society. And I can't think of a better, woman we should be acknowledging than Mother Angelica. What do you think young women today can learn from Mother Angelica?
I think what they can learn is that Jesus, loves them, obviously, and that they need to hold their gifts of what it is to be a woman, what it can be to be a mother, and realize what a great privilege that is. Obviously, one of Mother's great friends and a great friend of the network and guest was Alice von Hildebrand, and she always talked about the greatness and the fecundity of females. And I think, unfortunately, that aspect of the feminine genius, which is epitomized many ways by our Blessed Mother, has been lost in this kind of somehow attempt for women to become men.
I've read Raymond Arroyo's book and listened to it in audio. So I read the hard copy and listened to it. It was by far among my top five books that I've ever listened to, because he can imitate her so well and do her voice. And I listened to it all the way up north on a 5-hour drive. And it was, and to learn about her really impacted my life. Her courage, her prudence, her dedication, her commitment. I mean, no matter what she faced, she just forged ahead. And oftentimes we just want to give up, Doug. We just I just can't do this anymore, right? But we face challenges every day in life.
Right. And for Mother, it didn't mean it was easy either.
No. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It didn't mean she didn't spend hours in the chapel talking to our Lord, saying, you got to help me here. You gotta make this clearer, or you're gonna, you know, need to come up with some money. Because I stuck my neck out, and I think, you know, as much as you know, people sometimes see her taking these big strokes and you know, stepping out in faith, she did it as she said. You know, you step forward with one foot in the air and a queasy feeling in your stomach.
Yeah,
that's how it goes. And if you're sitting around waiting for lightning to strike that's going to clear the path for you. Dealing with Mother Angelica, I really understood the phrase from years before when I was a kid, which I didn't know what it meant, lamp unto my feet, which is just the idea that our Lord only gives you so much to see. Now, Mother had visions to see further on different things. She saw what the monastery was going to look at. Like, she saw St. Michael the Archangel, where the radio was going to be established. So she had insights that others, like us mere mortal types, didn't have. But even with that, she also carried the great responsibility of the network and her sisters and the people who counted on her. But she'd always say, listen, I'm just a donkey pulling the cart.
I love it. She is one of the most quotable people. I love sharing her quotes on my radio program every day, Doug. I mean, because they were so insightful, but yet, like I said, she was so funny. We're talking about Mother Angelica today. EW10 commemorates the foundress with a Vatican Mass and a day-long programming celebrating her life of faith and media innovation. Well, do you have a favorite, you know, memory of her, Doug, that you could share with our listeners?
There's several I would think about over the years. Recently, somebody asked me, and what had popped into my head was the story when my son Matt, who's high-functioning autistic, finally got confirmed, and I told Mother, we were in the area that was her office at the time where we'd have our vice president meetings, and she said, oh, I have to give him something. So she dug into her habit and pulled out her little black rosary case and pulled out, you know, her rosary beads and gave them to me to give to Matt. And she also had, as she pulled out, the little Jesus baby in there. She said, well, he can't go. He's got to stay. So she put him back in. But he could have the rosary. So that was always, I thought, a really sweet thing that Mother did for my son, Matt.
That's beautiful. Last couple of minutes here, Doug, with you. What would you say Mother Angelica would say about the media today, the world today, the progress the network has made? What do you think some of her thoughts would be?
Well, one would be she would be unfortunately disappointed in how bad things have gotten in some ways in society and even issues inside the church. I think that she would be have some great concerns over some of the things that are going on. That being said, I think she would think it's fabulous that EW10 has figured out a way to spread the word, the gospel, evangelization around the globe in as many different ways as possible. Because her goal was always to soak the earth with the truth of the Catholic Church, but leaving it up to the Holy Spirit to, change people's hearts. We can't convert anybody. All you can really do is propose the truth, and then it's up to people to be receptive. Everybody has free will, and I think Mother's major thing would be encouraging the average person to say, don't get down just because there's problems inside the church, or even if society looks like it's turning against the faith. At the end of the day, we've read the book, we win, we just have to persevere.
Yeah. Amen to that, Doug. And I just want to remind our listeners that if you miss any of the programming, you can always watch on demand, which I love. Remind people that there's so many ways to watch the programming on EWTN.
Absolutely. And that's been one of the great expansions we've had with Plus. And, I can always give a pitch that Father Spitzer's Universe and Bookmark are always available on our platform, as well as the great programs we're doing on Mother Angelica and a lot of the great events that are coming up with Passion Sunday and Holy Week. All the great coverage we normally have. Check out EWTN.com.
Doug Keck, thank you so much for being with us. Stay with us. More to come here on Catholic Connection. Wow, Talk with Jesus. Pray for the nation. Follow the journey. We're talking about the National Eucharistic Pilgrimage 2026 coming up. And to talk with us about that is our next guest, Zach Dotson. Zach, thank you for joining us here on Catholic Connection.
Thank you so much for having me today.
So give us an overview of the 2026 National Eucharistic Pilgrimage. Give us an idea of what's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. So this year, this is the third year that our nation has had a National Eucharistic Pilgrimage, the sixth route over out. We'll be celebrating the 250th anniversary of our nation this year. We'll be conducting the pilgrimage under the patroness of St. Francis Xavier Cabrini, our first canonized American citizen. Mm-hmm. And our theme is going to be One Nation Under God. So we'll be starting in Florida, working our way all the way up to Maine, and then snaking back down to Philadelphia for the 4th of July. We'll be hosting and conducting Eucharistic pilgrimages, holy hours, and masses, of course, throughout that time. We'll have service projects where we engage with our brothers and sisters in prisons and jails and hospitals and hospices and food pantries and soup kitchens, really bringing Christ absolutely everywhere that we can in the 7 weeks that we have.
So how does that work exactly? How will you be engaging people in prison ministries and soup kitchens? And how does that give us a kind of the logistical, how does that work?
Well, one event like in particular that I'm really excited about is in Baltimore. We're going to be having a breakfast with the local homeless population.
Okay.
So, of course, there will be time for us to connect one-on-one with the individual person. Pope Benedict has said that when we as Catholics truly love somebody, we're giving God to them because we know God is love from the Gospel of St. John. Mm-hmm. So there will be intimate personal moments like that. And then, of course, there'll be the much large-scale moments like those public processions, between cathedrals and parishes that we'll be undertaking where, of course, those who correctly recognize Christ's true presence in the Eucharist will have him physically brought to them. But even those who maybe are unaware of what the Eucharist truly is will have their hearts opened, and then the Holy Spirit can lead to that conversion.
So, Zach, how can people get involved, people listening today who want to get involved in the National Eucharistic Pilgrimage? What can they do?
Yeah, there's quite a few different ways that you can be involved. So if you are on the East Coast or can get to the East Coast, if you go to nationaleucharisticpilgrimage.org, you can actually click on whichever diocese or archdiocese that you'll be in, and you can register for the events that are going to be going on the days that we are there. If you're unable to physically be with us, you can show your support in quite a few ways as well. One initiative that we are undertaking is we're trying to collect 250,000 holy hours from across the nation, with prayers specifically for the nation, for healing in our nation, for the continual revival of the church within the United States. And then you can also support financially. So that can either be through donations to us as pilgrims on the website or sponsoring the National Eucharistic Pilgrimage as a whole.
So are the holy hours explained on the website as well?
Yeah, there's actually a wonderful tab where you click in, and it takes you right to the Google form.
Okay.
Name, email, and how many hours you plan to pledge for our nation between now and then the closing of the initiative. And then once all 250,000, hopefully plus, hours are collected, they're going to be made into a bouquet and presented to Congress.
Wow. That's going to be beautiful. So in honor of America's 250th year, the 2026 National Eucharistic Pilgrimage will carry the theme One Nation Under God. One Nation Under God is not a slogan. It's an invitation to realign our lives, communities, and country under the sovereignty of Christ. Zach, tell us, how did you get involved?
I actually, one of my parishioners here at my home parish in downtown Hammond, St. Joseph, was so moved by the 2024 pilgrimage that came through Northwest Indiana, and then by the 2025 pilgrimage, which started here in Indiana and finished in Los Angeles, he sent me the application process. And I was so honored that he would think I would even be worthy to fill out the application that I filled it out. And, it's been a great blessing to move forward in the process with the NEP. As well as, being receptive to the graces and fruits that God has already blessed me with in my participation thus far.
So that's a great point to make about how our faith continues to grow when we open up ourselves to other opportunities to share the faith with other people. So what does this look like to you in terms of your faith journey and evangelization?
it looks like, you know, one of the greatest opportunities I've had thus far in my life, you know, and again, one of the greatest blessings. You know, I've got to see very closely and intimately the power of Christ's Eucharistic heart when you, as you mentioned, when you truly engage with him, and you truly accept his love and divine mercy that he has for all of us. So I always say, you know, if we can open through all of our efforts a single heart to Christ, to his love, to the fullness of his truth through his bride here on earth, the Catholic Church, that makes it worth all of the work that we've been putting in up until this point and throughout the pilgrimage. I went through, unfortunately, I think maybe a lot of people from about 11 to 22 or 23, I went through a period of atheism. Mm. But when I finally came back to my first Mass, and coincidentally enough, it was Corpus Christi. And when Father Ted Nordquist here at St. Joseph's elevated the Eucharist and said, "Behold the Lamb of God, behold he who takes away the sins of the world," it finally clicked for me, you know, as an adult, you know, the great humility that Christ takes on to be truly present in the Eucharist, body, blood, soul, and divinity, you know, that this ceases being the elements of bread and wine and becomes Christ. So if I can aid the church in any capacity to open more hearts to that realization, I want to help out in any way that I can.
I love that, Zach. It sounds like a pretty powerful epiphany moment. I love to ask about epiphany moments where people see the Lord really shining light on their life. That's a beautiful one when in reference to Eucharist and the power of prayer in the Eucharist. And we're all invited to participate in the 2026 National Eucharistic Pilgrimage in honor of America's 250th year. And it's a call to build unity through prayer and to let Jesus present in the Eucharist renew and heal the heart of our country one soul at a time. And I love this too, Zach, one soul at a time, because it starts with each and every one of us. What is the hope for each person who gets involved with the pilgrimage, their takeaway, you know, and hope for the country?
I would say, and a bit of like a personal answer, every day when I pray that each person we encounter in whatever capacity that may be on this pilgrimage, you know, again, that their hearts are truly open to what the Eucharist is. It's not a symbol. It's not something that we just do. When a priest consecrates the elements, they cease to be bread and wine and, you know, become the body, blood, soul, and divinity of our Lord. And what a great blessing it is that, you know, he takes on this great humility to still be with us, to be physically present. You know, it often the Eucharist was referred to as this prison of love, right, that Christ is in. Mm-hmm. So if people can recognize that and start to, you know, reverently revere and receive the Eucharist, you know, join Holy Mother Church, I think that is, you know, the end goal, right, that more people increase their love of Christ, their acceptance of his love, and then truly recognize, you know, the Catholic Church as the fullness of his faith and the Eucharist as his body, blood, soul, and divinity. There's nothing more unifying than Christ's love, than his divine mercy, than his salvation. So I think it's such a beautiful thing for our nation if we really, you know, accept the fact that we are under his sovereignty. All of our rights come from him. We are a nation on pilgrimage heading towards our ultimate goal, which is him.
Amen. Zach Dotson, thanks for being with us, the 2026 National Eucharistic Pilgrimage. Stay with us, everyone. Kimberly Bird will be with us next. We're speaking with a member of Live Action, a team helping to effect real change in the culture by speaking on behalf of the preborn. And we're speaking today here in Catholic Connection with Kimberly Bird, Communications and Public Affairs Senior Specialist. Thank you so much, Kimberly, for joining us here today.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So give our listeners an overview of Live Action, and we'll talk about some of the things going on right now, but give us an overview.
Absolutely. Well, Live Action is a national pro-life content organization. We create content that does two things to change hearts and minds on abortion. One, we create content that shares the beauty of the human life developing in the womb, but we also can create content that shares the truth and the horrific reality about abortion and what actually happens. We were founded by Lila Rose when she was only 15 years old, and she started undercover investigations to uncover the evils and truths around Planned Parenthood and what was happening in the abortion clinics. And today we have almost 9 million followers online where we can share this incredible content, change hearts and minds every day, and just impact people all over the world.
That's beautiful. At 15 years old, I mean, she's starting a major movement, and I was probably polishing my nails. I mean, it's incredible, right? At 15, what she started. And I want to talk about the story in the National Catholic Register, Bill to Safeguard Women from Chemical Abortion, introduced by Senator Josh Hawley. Tell us about this, Kimberly.
So we have been working with our senators and representatives on various issues in D.C. right now, and really right now, the pro-life movement is heavily focused on the dangers of the abortion pill. It's something that Health and Human Services Secretary Kennedy and the FDA promised prior to taking the administration that they would review mifepristone and the abortion pill, and we have still not seen that review. So we're grateful that Senator Hawley has launched this investigation against the abortion pill manufacturers. He is asking for documents on the manufacturer, the distribution, and the marketing practices related to mifepristone, and he wants them within a month. And it's really because of new data that has come out, which suggests that 1 in 9 women suffer severe complications or adverse events after taking mifepristone. And we're talking about sepsis, hemorrhaging, infection. It's incredibly sad and very scary for women. But we're also, again, focused on the millions of preborn children that have been killed by the abortion pill as well. So this is a great investigation that I hope will, again, be able to push the administration to continue further review.
You know, and it's such important information out to get to the public on the dangers of these drugs. And what's so frustrating, Kimberly, is that we don't see mainstream media covering it at the extent that they should, you know, and just a perfect example of why we need to rely more and more on EW10 and the National Catholic Register to share this information, because the general public is not getting it from other media outlets. And these are, you know, this is, so how frustrating is that for you in the work that you do in communications with Live Action, is that you have such important message to share with women, but yet the mainstream media is not covering it?
Absolutely. It's always frustrating, but that is our goal every day, is to continue to educate on the truth and to do so with love. We want to continue to share this information and help people understand the truth of what's really happening. One thing that has been really helpful in the last, I would say, several months around the truth around the abortion pill, we've seen several attorney generals in various states sue Planned Parenthood for false advertising the abortion pill. So for typical advertising for Planned Parenthood, they say the abortion pill is safer than Tylenol. This new data suggests that it is actually 22 times higher of a risk for severe complications than what they're putting on the drug label. So they are false advertising, and we have to continue to combat that with education and love.
Oh, wow. And that's such a dangerous ad, you know, to women today, and not sharing. And what's so frustrating, Kimberly, about that, too, is that in the same tone, they say we're all about women's rights and women's health issues, but yet they don't put all the facts and data out so women can make these decisions that's best for them. Right. They put them
women
in these.
Women deserve to know the truth.
Yeah,
and,
they do deserve
and also
the truth.
Our Senate senators and FDA, they need to be protecting women with certain, there's no structure around, you know, certain safety requirements anymore. When the Biden administration came into, they dismantled the REMS, any in-person dispensing requirements. They dismantled any requirement to report an adverse event. They took away the requirement for an ultrasound. So now these pills are coming through the mail. They can be distributed to anyone, whether you are a woman or a man or pregnant or not. And so we're seeing, you know, certain lawsuits all over the country around mifepristone and the abortion pill. And it's time that, you know, federally we need to be urging our Health and Human Services and FDA to take a look at this and put those requirements back in and then ultimately pull the abortion pill from the market.
Yeah, and Kimberly, they're taking these pills in their own home settings without any kind of medical assistance, which is dangerous in itself. You know, you're in these situations. How does the bill challenge, the bill that's challenging the FDA's loosening of these safety protocols around abortion pills, how significant is this in the broader fight over federal oversight of the abortion drugs?
It is significant. I mean, we need to continue to, you bring up a great point. Many women are taking this alone at home, and they have not been seen by a doctor. Many of them are going to be at a different gestation than maybe be further along in their pregnancy and you know, have severe complications from that as well. And you know, really they're just not being educated on what they're actually doing. So much education out there is by Planned Parenthood. They're the number one sex ed distributors in our public schools in the country. And they are not teaching that life begins at conception. You have to continue to educate on that and really teach the true biology of what's actually happening during a pregnancy. We need to tackle it from various angles, whether that is state legislation and federal legislation. But I do think the abortion pill, it's so dangerous and the numbers are so high. It is the number one ability or the number one type of abortion that is happening throughout our country. Abortion pill, I think, represents 63% of all abortions. And so that is something that we have to tackle.
You know, to elaborate on that thought, Kimberly, how does the rise of mail order abortion pills reflect a deeper cultural shift in how society views women, motherhood, and the unborn?
That's a great question. We recently had an undercover investigation where we had an investigator call 27 or 30 Planned Parenthoods throughout the country and mentioned various things like, I don't know how pregnant I am or how far along I am. I'm being pressured by my boyfriend. I'm 16 years old. I don't want to tell my parents. Can you just mail them to a friend's house? And none of these individuals that she spoke with cared. They didn't require any information. They helped her avoid speaking with parents or, you know, avoid the possible abuse that she may have been receiving. So, you know, long story short, this is a very big problem, and it tells you that Planned Parenthood cares about profit over women. Yeah. They care about profit over children. And it's just, you know, it's so evil. It's something that we just see as such a spiritual battle that we have to fight every single day.
Yeah, it's a business, and they care about the bottom line for sure. And you've done such a wonderful job, Kimberly, explaining the role of live action. But I want to go a little deeper, you know, about live action and, you know, the hope you want to play as the legislation moves forward, you know, focusing what on education, advocacy, investigative work. Kind of give us more of an overview of the work you're doing as this legislation moves forward.
So one of the things that we have actually been working on for many years is called Baby Olivia. It is a video that we created alongside embryologists and doctor medical OBGYNs. It's an animated video of a baby developing in the womb, where we categorize the different things that happen, the different developmental milestones that happen. And it only lasts about 3 minutes. We recently released a second video called Baby Oliver, which is a little bit longer and goes deeper into the developmental milestones. But what we've been doing is working with state legislators across the country to require or to put laws in place that require fetal development education. As I mentioned, Planned Parenthood is deeply rooted into our public school system, teaching sex ed, encouraging contraception, and completely saying that life doesn't begin at conception. And so we have to get into schools. And recently, South Dakota, just a few days ago, signed into law the Baby Olivia Law requiring fetal development education in their state. And they are the seventh state to do so. So now we have seven states with 20 others proposing legislation that's similar. We find that there is a need for us to talk about this in schools. And it doesn't even talk about abortion. It just talks about the truth of the developing child in the womb. And that's something that we have to start at a young age. And many of this legislation is targeted towards elementary and middle school students.
I love that angle, Kimberly, of focusing on the developmental stages of a baby growing in the womb and that this is life upon conception. I think that's a great approach, especially among young people. Now, critics say the bills like this restrict access to healthcare. We've heard this argument. How do you respond to that framing, especially when the data shows significant risks associated with chemical abortions?
Well, again, this is not healthcare, right? I've heard one doctor say, when two patients go in and only one patient comes out, that's not healthcare.
So there are
so many things that we can do now with the advancements of technology to be able to, operate on a baby in the womb and have them continue on developing in their mother. There are times where a baby may need to be delivered early. But never is there a time that abortion should be required. And it's really hard for us to see in many of these states that have the heartbeat bill enacted where, you can, like in the state of Florida where I reside, I'm very proud to be in a pro-life state, but we still have exceptions to, you can't have an abortion after 6 weeks, except in the cases of rape or life of the mother. And there is never an instance where you need to kill a child intentionally in order to save the mother. You may need to deliver early. That's healthcare. And then, take care of the baby and take care of the mother. But you never need to intentionally kill in order to save the life of the mother. And so we have to continue to work with amazing doctors. There are even former abortionists who are now pro-life advocates who spend time working with us and testify to the fact that that never needs to happen and that it's a separate human being with its own human dignity. And so it's important for us to continue to educate on those things. And we have to continue to work and educate with our legislatures and make sure that they understand the laws that they're writing.
Yeah. Kimberly Bird with us here on Catholic Connection from Live Action. We have less than a minute left with you here, Kimberly. Last words for our listeners before we let you go.
Please continue to educate yourself on the movement, on what's happening in the movement. We are continuing to try to defund Planned Parenthood again this year in July. So we want to urge our senators and our representatives in D.C. to make sure that they continue to extend that defund of Planned Parenthood. And please work with your state legislators as well to have pro-life, pro-family bills. We have to do this together as a movement.
Kimberly Bird, Live Action, thank you so much for being with us here on Catholic Connection.
Thank you.
Stay with us, everyone. We're going to wrap up this hour after the break. Don't go away.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
Good Friday morning, this March 27th. I'm Vanessa Denha-Garmo, filling in for my dear sister in Christ this morning, Teresa Tomeo. I like to call myself a chief communications officer and a communications evangelist with Epiphany Communications. I love the work I do in professional development training, leadership development coaching, and serving as a communications consultant. Of course, host of Epiphany on EWTN affiliate Ave Maria Radio in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Always a pleasure to be with all of you here today. It's EWTN Radio Extra. And joining us here on EWTN will be our guest, Paul McCusker, will be with us, Senior Director of Creative Content for the Augustine Institute, talking about a new children's series, Welcome to Hope Springs, and also share a coach's commentary about taking our faith to work with us in honor of St. Margaret Clitheroe, whose feast day we celebrated yesterday, known as being a businesswoman In York. So we'll be talking with her, talking about her in my coach's commentary, kind of tying into being on the job with Jesus. How do we take our faith to work with us everywhere we go? That is the premise of a book I have coming out this year by Marion Press. So I'll talk with you more about that in my coach's commentary. I want to share with you some information about Lazarus Friday. And I pulled this information from Father Robert Spitzer's Magis AI, because in the Chaldean Church, we acknowledge Lazarus Friday. Now, I'm from the Eastern Rite, the Chaldean Rite in the Catholic Church. My parents were immigrants. They came from Iraq, and we're all part of the Universal Church, all under the Pope and the Vatican, but we're part of the Eastern Rite. So our liturgical calendar is different from the Latin Rite. So in the Chaldean Rite calendar, we acknowledge Lazarus Friday. It's observed to commemorate the raising of Lazarus from the dead by Jesus, as narrated in the Gospel of John. This event is of profound significance as it reflects Jesus's divine power over death and foreshadows his own passion, death, and resurrection. The miracle of Lazarus is not simply a demonstration of power, but the initiation of Jesus's glory, his total self-gift of love, culminating in the cross, which grants liberation from spiritual death and invites believers to live as children of God in the light of divine love and grace. Of course, this again is what I found from putting in the information in Magis AI, which is Father Robert Spitzer's AI platform, his app, which I really love. The liturgical observance of Lazarus Friday in the Chaldean tradition serves as a spiritual preparation for Holy Week. Whereas some traditions celebrate Lazarus Saturday, the Chaldean Church places this commemoration on Friday, focusing contemplatively on Jesus's empathetic love, his weeping over death, and his ultimate freedom he offers through resurrection. The removal of the stone from Lazarus's tomb and Jesus's command to unbind him and let him go symbolizes spiritual liberation rather than mere physical revival. This sets the tone for the unfolding events of Holy Week, Jesus's triumphant entry into Jerusalem, his passion, death, and hope of the resurrection. That is so today in the liturgical calendar and the Chaldean Rite is Lazarus Friday. We're approaching 4 minutes past the hour here on Catholic Connection, and that means it's time for the news on EWTN. And with that, here's an update on the weather from Chris Powers.
Warm and quiet conditions settle across much of the central and eastern United States today, with above average temperatures stretching from the plains to the east coast. The southeast enjoys sunshine and mild air, with Atlanta climbing into the low 70s and Miami nearing 80. Along the east coast, partly sunny skies push New York and Boston into the upper 50s this afternoon. Across the Midwest, clouds mix with sunshine as temperatures remain near seasonal levels. Chicago reaches the mid-40s, while Minneapolis stays cooler under lingering cloud cover. The plains remain mostly dry with light winds and intervals of sunshine. Out west, a more active pattern develops. The Pacific Northwest sees periods of rain and highs in the 50s, while Northern California picks up scattered showers. Southern California stays mostly dry with mild conditions. Mountain areas in the Rockies may see light snow as cooler air moves through the region. That's your national forecast. I'm Chris Powers.
A landmark verdict in Los Angeles today could reshape the future of social media regulation. A jury has found Meta and YouTube liable for creating platforms that contributed to harmful and addictive behavior in young users. This from CBS News. The case was brought by a woman identified as KGM, who said years of using Instagram and YouTube as a child fueled depression, body image issues, and suicidal thoughts. Jurors agreed, awarding her $3 million in damages and another $3 million in punitive damages. Meta is responsible for 70% of the judgment, YouTube 30%. The jury ruled the companies were negligent in how they designed their platforms and failed to warn families about potential risks to minors. They also found the companies acted with malice of oppression, noting internal awareness of possible harm. Both Meta and Google say they will appeal, arguing the verdict misrepresents their platforms and that the teen mental health issue is far more complex than any single app. Legal experts say this decision could open the doors to thousands of similar lawsuits nationwide. It follows another major ruling this week in New Mexico, where Meta was ordered to pay $375 million for violating state child protection laws. The partial government shutdown could end soon, Perry Williams reports.
Overnight, the Senate passed a bill to fund most of Homeland Security, including the Transportation Security Administration. This air traveler at O'Hare Airport supports TSA agents who have gone weeks without pay.
It's the end of the day. Everybody needs to travel, and the people that work here at the airport should be taken care of, right? Because that's their job, and they shouldn't be put in the middle of a political situation.
The bill, which now goes to the House, would provide funding for all of DHS agencies except for ICE and Border Patrol. I'm Perry Williams.
The U.S. is working with mediators to end war in Iran. President Trump is giving Iran another 10 days until April 6th to reopen the Strait of Hormuz or face an attack on its energy infrastructure. Ross Cullen reports Trump says talks with Iran are going very well, although Iran's leadership has rejected a 15-point U.S. proposal to end the war.
Iran has not confirmed publicly that it is in direct negotiations with the United States, but it's understood that back-channel talks are being held between Washington and Tehran, with various countries involved in conveying messages back and forth, including Egypt, Pakistan, and Turkey.
White House envoy Steve Witkoff says during a cabinet meeting yesterday that those countries have agreed to mediate talks between the U.S. and Iran and have asked Tehran for a high-level meeting. Witkoff says there are strong signs that Tehran was ready to negotiate. Cullen reports the U.S. is keeping its options open.
According to reports in the Wall Street Journal, Donald Trump is considering sending another 10,000 ground troops to the Middle East ahead of a possible incursion into Iran, on top of the more than 3,000 soldiers already on their way to the Gulf.
EWTN News reports that in Finland, parliamentarian Pavi Rasanen has been convicted by the Supreme Court on one charge related to a 2004 pamphlet expressing her Christian views on marriage and sexual ethics. The 3-2 ruling cited insulting a group under Finland's criminal code on war crimes and crimes against humanity. Rasanen was acquitted of charges tied to her 2019 Bible verse tweet, which sparked a legal battle. She says she's shocked and profoundly disappointed and plans to appeal the European Court of Human Rights. The case has drawn international attention. Critics call the conviction a threat to religious freedom and free speech. She insists that the issue goes beyond her own rights, saying this is about every person's freedom to share their beliefs. The decision follows earlier acquittals in 2022 and 23. The Supreme Court revisited the case after a third appeal by prosecutors. The NYPD is prioritizing security around synagogues as Passover starts next week. Scott Pringle reports.
Police Commissioner Jessica Tisch told Jewish community leaders on Thursday that she has not seen a threat environment quite like this one in her 18 years in government.
These are perilous times, to be sure, and I know you feel the stress and the anxiety. I feel it too. But I also know that the NYPD is laser focused on keeping this city safe.
The NYPD is deploying counterterrorism teams and canine units to synagogues and has a network of cameras and sensors in place as part of Passover-related security. In New York, I'm Scott Pringle.
A group of exorcists is warning the Pope that Satanism is on the rise, Michael Kastner reports.
Officials with the International Association of Exorcists met with Pope Leo at the Vatican earlier this month on Friday the 13th and told the pontiff that thousands of exorcists are needed to tackle the rise in Satanism and dark magic. The group claimed that the spread of paganism and the occult was being fueled by social media and that there was a worldwide shortfall of about 2,000 exorcists. It called for every Catholic diocese to have at least one exorcist. The first ever pope to have been born in the United States is called the work of Catholic exorcists delicate but most necessary. I'm Michael Kastner.
You need to file an extension to avoid costly penalties if you can't get your taxes in on time. Jack Crumley reports.
Tax season is here, and if you need extra time to file, you have to ask for it. Chief Tax Information Officer at Jackson Hewitt, Mark Stieber, explains.
In our tax code, we have the ability to extend the filing deadline by 6 months, and a lot of states piggyback on that, and some have their own. But the reality is, all you have to do to extend your filing deadline is file your 4868 extension. You can do it electronically, you can mail it in.
He says asking for that extension does not mean you can extend the time to pay up if you owe money on your tax return.
But to be clear, the extension of time in the tax code is only to send in your paperwork. If you owe money, that money is due by April 15th. There's only an extension of time to send in your documents.
Stieber warns that if you file an extension and don't pay the money you owe, you risk being penalized and will wind up owing more to Uncle Sam. The tax filing deadline is Wednesday, April 15th at midnight.
The Vatican has announced that Venerable Archbishop Fulton Sheen will be beatified on Thursday, September 24th in St. Louis, Missouri. The Mass will be presided over by Cardinal Luis Antonio Tagle, representing Pope Leo XIV. Sheen was declared venerable in 2012 and recognized for a miracle in 2019, clearing the way for beatification. Born in El Paso, Illinois in 1895, Sheen was ordained in 1919 and became one of the most influential Catholic voices in American media. His radio show, The Catholic Hour, reached millions, and his television series, Life is Worth Living, drew more than 30 million viewers. Known for his dynamic preaching and deep intellect, Sheen died in 1979 at the age of 84. Following the beatification, he'll be known as Blessed Fulton Sheen. The EW10 Global Catholic Network is commemorating the 10th anniversary of the death of its foundress, Mother Angelica, with a Mass at St. Peter's Basilica in Rome on today, right now, March 27th at 11 o'clock Eastern Time. EW10 News reported that the Memorial Mass will be celebrated by Father Michael Baggett at the Basilica's choir altar at 11 o'clock Eastern Time, making a decade since the death of the Poor Clare nun who founded what would become the world's largest Catholic media network. Mother Angelica loved the beauty and grandeur of St. Peter's Basilica and wanted only the best for her beloved Jesus Christ, said Michael Warsaw, EW10 Chair and CEO. It's fitting that we honor her memory and commitment to sharing truth, beauty, and goodness with the world at the place that points all people toward the transcendent. In addition to the Mass at St. Peter's Basilica, EW10 is marking the anniversary with special programming throughout the day, including Remembering Mother Angelica 10 Years Later. Coverage will consist of events from the EW10 Chapel. It is 14 minutes past the hour here on Catholic Connection on EW10 Radio Extra. We'll be right back after this with my coach's commentary. EW10 Radio Extra. Vanessa Dentagarmo here with my coach's commentary. And many of you know I'm a leadership development coach, facilitator, and trainer focusing on leadership development, team building, our strengths, our natural talents, our weaknesses, and our communication styles. And today I want to talk about the Feast of St. Margaret Clitheroe. And yesterday we celebrated the Feast of St. Margaret, the Pearl of York, who a woman whose courage still speaks powerfully into our world, our workplaces, and our leadership. Margaret was a wife, a mother, and a businesswoman, and she ran a shop. She managed a household. She lived in ordinary rhythms of life, daily life. And yet, in these ordinary rhythms, she lived her faith extraordinary and with extraordinary conviction. And this really ties into how to take our faith to work with us. It's really important we cannot compartmentalize our Christian faith. Christ has to be at the center of everything we do. And so we look to people who've come before us, like St. Margaret, like Mother Angelica, who showed us how to take our faith with us everywhere we go. We commemorate the 10-year anniversary of Mother Angelica's death. Someone else we look to, a wonderful woman, two powerful women, as we look at Women's History Month in the month of March. So with St. Margaret, during the English Reformation, when Catholicism was outlawed, Margaret quietly turned her home and even her business into a sanctuary. She sheltered priests. She created hidden spaces for Mass. She was a convert to the Catholic faith, even though her husband remained Protestant. She protected the sacraments with fierce maternal courage, and she did all of this while raising her children and running her shop. She didn't preach from a pulpit. She didn't hold a title. She simply lived her faith where God placed her. And that's what we're all called to do, living our faith where God has placed us in everything that we do. And that's the first lesson she really gives us today. Your workplace is part of your mission field. Your faith doesn't stay at home. It doesn't stay in the church. It goes with you to the office, to the classroom, to the boardroom, to the shop floor, to the Zoom meeting, to the hallway conversation. You carry Jesus with you everywhere you go. And that's what it means to be on the job with Jesus. And this is part of a course I'm teaching through the Guadalupe Radio Network Academy, which is another affiliate of EWTN. It's starting April 18th. I hope you join me there. I'm going to be sharing with you for 7 weeks, each week, a different tip that how we could take our faith to work with us, all based on 7 Christian habits for professional success on the job with Jesus, based on a book I have coming out by Marian Press this year. So I'm going to share with you practical ways to take your faith to work with you and what that looks like. Now, Jesus said in Matthew, the Gospel of Matthew, yet let your light shine before others so they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. St. Margaret lived that quietly, steadily, courageously. I mean, St. Margaret and Mother Angelica are both amazing examples of courage in the face of adversity. And all of us are going to face some kind of adversity, especially when we're trying to live our Christian faith, because we're going to get pushback from the culture. And what are we going to do? What are we going to do? We look to women like Mother Angelica, like St. Margaret, like Mother Mary, and standing up for what is right and just, centering our entire lives on Jesus Christ. St. Margaret's witness leads us into today's reflection on leadership and culture, which I want to share with you, because whether you realize it or not, you are shaping the culture around you every single day. Right? We shape the culture with how we show up. So every leader, every person creates culture. Our work cultures, our home cultures, our church cultures, we're all contributing to that, whether we mean it or not, or know it or not. And it's not happening only in big moments like a retreat or a strategic plan, which is great. It's happening in the smallest interactions, a quick email, a hallway check-in, a meeting you rush into, even the silence you didn't realize you were communicating. Your culture isn't written on the wall. It's written in your conversations. St. Paul reminds us in Ephesians 4:29, let no unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up. That's culture. That's leadership. That's discipleship. Culture is created one conversation at a time. Number 2, your strengths and weaknesses are always speaking. Most leaders assume culture is shaped by mission statements and strategy, but the truth is far more personal. Your strengths and weaknesses are speaking every day. Even when you're silent, you're communicating. Your team feels both your strengths and your weaknesses, your confidence and your hesitation, your clarity and your confusion, long before you even realize it, because that's how you're showing up. You're sending messages without even speaking. Now, leadership isn't about perfection. It's really about awareness, self-awareness, knowing who we are and how God created us to be in his likeness and image, but uniquely made with our own talents, our own gifts. Jesus tells us in the Gospel of Luke, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. Your interior life becomes your leadership life. Your habits become your culture. Once you see your patterns, you can shift them. If you see some disconnects in the workplace and you realize it's coming from you, you can make small little shifts, right? Think about your last interaction with someone on your team. Maybe it was a short message or a moment of tension. That exchange just doesn't transfer information. It reveals how you show up, what you value, and how your natural patterns shape the culture around you. Every interaction is a window into your leadership style. Your team is reading the window every single day. They're looking through your window. St. Margaret Clitheroe understood this. She didn't have authority, but she had influence. Her presence shaped the culture of her home and ultimately the underground church in England. Mother Angelica built EWTN. So the gift in the shadow of our strengths, we also have to be very cognizant when our strengths overpower us, because they can, and they can create blind spots or shadows. The decisive leader can become dismissive. The relational leader may avoid hard conversations. The analytical leader can get lost in details. The visionary leader may leave others confused. This is why self-awareness is so important. Your team experiences these sides of you, not because you're failing, because you're human. So awareness is that turning point. When you understand how your strengths lands on other people, you can lead with intention instead of being on autopilot. This is the heart of Catholic anthropology. We are beautifully made but imperfect, gifted but in need of grace, strong but capable of shadows. So you can make little small shifts. Let me give an example. One leader prided herself on clarity, but her long emails felt like micromanagement. And when she switched to bullet points and asked, what's the one thing you need from me? Everything changed. Instead of those, like, you know, you get those emails where it looks like a novel's written and you, like, you know, roll your eyes. Right? So you have to make little shifts and say, you know what? People are, like, not taking me seriously, or they're getting overwhelmed by the way I communicate. I'm over communicating. So I'm going to write things in bullet points, and I'm going to ask people what else that I can do for them. What else do they need from me? That small shift can make a huge change in the culture. Another leader believed that silence meant trust, and his team interpreted it as disinterested. And when he started offering brief check-in, engagement soared in the workplace. These are little overhauls. You could just ask 90-second little engagements. How are things going? What might you need from me? Is there confusion in the workplace? Ask questions. Go on listening tours. These are small little intentional adjustments that change everything. Jesus often worked this way. Small encounters, small conversations, small gestures that transformed hearts. You know, think about the women at the well, the disciples on the road to Emmaus. Cultural changes through conversations. And that's what we have to think about in our life. And I'm going to share with you, lastly, three anchors of healthy cultures. If you want to strengthen your culture, start with three anchors. Consistency. Your team shouldn't have to guess what version of you will show up to work today. Clarity. Say what you mean. Say it simply. Say it in a way people can act on. Let your yes be yes and your no be no. And we learn this from scripture. Finally, connection. People don't follow titles. They follow leaders who see them, hear them, and value them. And when you combine consistency, clarity, and connection, you create a culture where people thrive. Stay with us, everyone. That's my coach's commentary. We'll be right back after this. As parents increasingly search for wholesome entertainment rooted in a Christian worldview, the Augustine Institute announces the release of Welcome to Hope Springs, an audio drama series for children and families written by Peabody Award-winning author Paul McCusker and produced by the award-winning creative team at the Augustine Institute. Paul, thank you for joining us here on Catholic Connection.
It's my pleasure. It's good to be with you.
So let's talk about what inspired this particular series, Welcome to Hope Springs.
Well, a couple of things, really. One is I've been writing stories for years. I love to tell stories, and this was another way to do it. But a big part of it was trying to create, well, really Catholic-based storytelling. How do we do slice of life, mystery, adventure stories, tell them through a fictional reality, but maintain a Catholic filter through everything, so we can talk about the sacraments, talk about faith, how do we live out our faith in relationships and in various situations. So that was a big driver.
And so tell us how many episodes is this, and who's the target audience?
Well, I'm writing for basically this wonderful age of about 11, 12 years old. It's not quite small children, and it's not adolescence yet. It's a wonderful period of life. And that allows us to tell a lot of different types of stories that we know will play for older and younger listeners. And we are actually creating, we've created first 10 episodes in what we're calling season one. Mm-hmm. But we've already produced seasons two. We're in the middle of season three, writing season four. So this is an ongoing series. We're dedicated to doing as many episodes as we can.
So does each episode kind of have a lesson learned or a theme to it?
Well, we follow kind of a story arc through, let's say, the first season has 10 stories.
Okay.
And they're interconnected because we find that kids love now serialized storytelling. Mm. They like ongoing characters, ongoing situations. So the lessons are there, but they're sort of thematic and buried within the big story. And that's where we want parents to engage and sort of talk to kids about the stories and get the kids to talk about what they're hearing and the choices that are being made and why they were made and ultimately what the parents believe.
Yeah. And I know there's a trailer on the website that people could check out as well. You know, Paul, how does this, you know, differ from some of your past work? You're a Peabody Award-winning author, which is incredible. And congratulations to that. Coming from radio, I know how significant that award is. How does this differ from the work you've done in the past?
Well, I think what makes it different to some degree is that it is essentially Catholic, and it's, again, not heavy-handed teaching, but Catholic thinking and teaching is definitely within it, as opposed to, for example, I did a program for years called Adventures in Odyssey, which some of your listeners might know. It's been on for a long time, and I worked on it for, I don't know, 25 years, and it was similar in that it was the same sorts of slice of life, adventure, mystery stories, but it was inherently, I want to say, Protestant. And there's overlap between the two, obviously. But to do something in which there's an assumed Catholicism is the new thing, because I'm not aware of anything else out there quite like it. And so I thought, well, this is a good way to inspire, one hopes, the faith in the listeners and to get for them to get excited about it, because the characters are living it out.
Mm-hmm. You know, we're talking with Paul McCusker here today, producer of award-winning creative team, and the Augustine Institute put together this 10-episode first season, bringing the characters of fictional mountain town of Hope Springs, Colorado, to life through immersive storytelling grounded in faith, family, and everyday adventures. And what I love about children's stories, children's books, I don't believe they're children. I believe they're family, you know, and
right.
Like this series, I think it's great for the whole family. What are you hoping, what kind of conversations, Paul, are you hoping this might prompt with young children and their parents, you know, as they watch this series? And I believe parents should be I read everything my daughter read as she was growing up, and everything she watched, I watched along with her. And it helped me grow in my own faith, especially when it came to the Catholic teachings that she learned in Catholic school. But what are you hoping families will take away from this series?
Well, we're big believers in intentional parenting, which is, I mean, a show like this could be obviously used as a babysitter, and hopefully it's trustworthy enough that parents will feel comfortable having their kids listen on their own. But what we really want is the family engagement. Because like I say, what we do is, I'm not writing, we don't write down for children. We're aware of the kinds of topics that we do, and I'm aware of the kinds of language that I might use in terms of dialogue. And we also don't want to put parents in an awkward position by introducing ideas or subjects that they might not be ready for. But ultimately, what we want is that engagement where you could listen to an episode and ask questions. And what we find about audio drama is, because it's a very personal thing, that we're giving enough clues for the listener to imagine what's going on, kids take it very personally. And what they'll do then is open up. If you can ask the right questions, and if you give them a chance to just express themselves without maybe a lot of lecturing, but make it a teaching moment to talk about the situations that were presented in the story. And once you do that, kids really will open up, and they'll open up not only about what they think of the story, but they'll open up about other things in their day that may or may not have had anything to do with the story. There's something about stories that just open that up for kids, and you have great opportunity for engagement. Mm-hmm. And we also don't believe parents should ever be punished for listening or engaging in something their kids enjoy. So we always write things in for the adults in the listening audience so that they can enjoy it too.
Yeah, I think it's so beautiful because it'll prompt those 104 conversations, and perhaps your children will share things that are on their heart that you didn't even know about as a parent.
Right, right. And yeah. We know that that's happened. We know that from past experiences with the other dramas.
Yeah, that's Paul McCusker here today with us on Catholic Connection, talking with us about this new series. How do we get a hold of this series? Where do we need to go?
Well, right now we are airing it pretty much wherever it can be aired. For example, the Augustine Institute has the Formed platform, and so it's there. It's on Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon has it, Pandora, even YouTube. If you look it up on YouTube, you can listen to it there. So we have done our best to try to get it out to wherever the listeners are so that they get a chance to hear it.
And you know, Paul, when you write like this, how does it change your own faith, like enhance your own faith journey? We're going to a few seconds before we go to break, but how does it help you in your own faith journey every time you write?
Well, I think my whole writing experience has been sort of integrated with my faith and vice versa. So I learn as the listeners learn. I learn as I'm writing ideas and I'm exploring themes with characters and through story. I'm learning, and very often I'll take on subjects, whether it's prayer or forgiveness or certain things that I actually want to find out more about. And I want the Catholic point of view on that. And generally that feeds back into my life. It makes a difference to me as I'm discovering what listeners are discovering.
Yeah, that's what a great observation. Paul McCusker here with us, Senior Director of Creative Content for the Augustine Institute, talking about the new children's series, Welcome to Hope Springs. We're going to continue more with Paul after the break. Don't go away. Talking with Paul McCusker here, Senior Director of Creative Content for the Augustine Institute. Talk about the new children's series, Welcome to Hope Springs. So, Paul, before we go on to other projects you're working on, and we'll talk about the Saint series as well, how can people get a hold, again, of Welcome to Hope Springs?
Well, we are trying to put it wherever people are generally listening to audio and podcasts and things like that. So you'll find us on Spotify, on the Formed platform, the Augustine Institute's platform, Pandora, Apple Music, all of the major platforms, including YouTube. We put it there so anybody can get to it wherever they listen.
So let's talk about other programming. And I know you also produce a wonderful Saint series, including on St. Francis of Assisi, who we are celebrating this year, the Jubilee Year of St. Francis of Assisi. So tell us about that.
Well, it was the lead-in to this, actually, when I first started working with the Augustine Institute. Before, as I was developing the Hope Springs series, and I was writing novels for Hope Springs, and so there are a bunch of kids' novels, and we've written things and created things for all age groups in that world. We thought, first, we ought to find out if the Catholic community even wants anything like this. So we started doing what I had been doing with Focus on the Family before this, and we started creating larger dramas recorded in England with world-class actors. And we did St. Francis was the first. It's called Brother Francis, the Barefoot Saint of Assisi. And then we went on right away to do St. Patrick and then St. Cecilia and a little bit later St. Joan of Arc. And then also to throw into the mix, we did the proper Catholic version of the story of Robin Hood, because the original stories were essentially Catholic. Mm-hmm. And I restored that to the story through our version.
Mm. And so what other things are you working on moving forward in 2026? Is this going to be a focus, this Hope series a focus, or are there other projects?
Yeah, Hope Springs is going to be the main focus. And as I mentioned, a big part of that is the fact that we do have first reader novels. I have books for the age group 11, 12, 13, a series called The Virtue Chronicles, and short stories and other younger kids' stories that we've created over the years that we are going to be getting out more aggressively into the public, because it's all part of the same world. I mean, I hate to put it this way, but it's like a Marvel universe where you have all these interconnecting parts that they stand alone individually, so you don't have to know all the other stories. But if you do read them, they're all interconnected in this world of the fictional town of Hope Springs.
Paul, what advice do you have for young writers today who may be listening, who are interested in being a storyteller in that, you know, and especially from a faith perspective?
Well, if they're interested, number one, we need stories, good stories from good writers from a faith perspective, one that really knows how to do that. And if there's anybody out there, I started writing really at the point when I could put a pencil to paper. I mean, I just, storytelling was an expression from a very young age. So I would encourage people not to ignore it if they're interested in it. And if kids want to, the two big pieces of advice would be to write, just write anything. Don't be hypercritical. Just keep writing, write and more writing. And then I think writers are good readers. And so you want to read how other writers write. And if that includes you want to be a filmmaker or a TV writer or something like that, then engage in it. That's what you want to. You want to learn how they do it, for good and bad. And so do both things. You want to write, and then you want to read. You want to engage.
Paul, why is storytelling so important in our faith journey?
Well, I think it's wired into us. I think it's wired into us by God. I mean, the first thing we know about him from the story from Genesis is that God created, and that part of the spirit that he put into us is that we're what Tolkien would have called sub-creators. And I think story is part of that. We want to tell stories because they kind of lock things down. They kind of, Jesus told stories.
I mean,
he would proclaim the truth, and he would tell stories because he realized that the brain engages as both. He knows, well, he would know better than anyone how our brain works. And he knows that stories work at a different level than the proclamation of something. So if I state something to you, you're going to grab it and you're going to say, I accept that or I don't. But if I want to teach you about forgiveness, a father had two sons. And one day, you know, it's the once upon a time illuminates at a different level our understanding and the way we process things. So story, I think, is not only wired into us, and we want to do it, but we also love to hear it.
Yeah.
And there's, I mean, we all have stories, and we all tell them, and I just think we're wired to embrace them in a different way.
Yeah. It definitely helps us connect with people, Paul, really, and and try to, you know, as the Lord teaches us to seek to understand, and St. Augustine said, you know, seek to understand before being trying to be understood. Those stories help us do that when we ask people to tell us their story. Paul, can you share with our listeners who may not be familiar with the St. Augustine Institute, give us a background of the history of it and the work that you do today?
Well, it was founded by Dr. Tim Gray with several others, and a big part of it was it was an academic institution. We've been around for 20 years. I've been with them a little over 10. And a big part of it was not only a graduate program for lay people in order to learn more in theology, and at the heart of it, to engage lay people so they can engage in their churches. Mm-hmm. Everything we do kind of comes back to the church. And so we're creating things so that it will strengthen the church. But you do that by strengthening individuals in their learning, in their faith, and living out their faith. Mm-hmm. And so the whole extension where I'm working is this area of creative effort. How do we use whatever is at our means to make the teachings of the church come alive? How do we help people make faith come alive in their lives so that's impacting them and impacting the people around them relationally?
And you're meeting people where they're at on their own faith journey, right? So regardless of where you're at your faith journey, you're taking something from these wonderful series that you're producing, these books, Welcome to Hope Springs. And so it doesn't really matter where you're at your faith journey, right? I mean, Paul, there's a way to connect to these stories and relate it to your own life today.
Right. I don't hold any assumptions in the storytelling about where people are. It's going to be where I perceive that most of us are with the struggles that we have and the things that we wonder about, especially with kids. And in fact, I just don't assume at a high level that people know what we used to think people knew about their faith. And so that's a big part of it is trying to engage where people generally are. And then it's inspiration. It's not just information. I think sometimes we're really good at information, but we miss the inspiration part. And that is, how do you inspire people to go deeper into the meaning behind the information? What does it mean to love my neighbor? What does it mean to be charitable? All of those questions are very important, and storytelling is an inspiring way to explore them.
Yeah, because inspiration, Paul, is what moves us to take action, right? We can have the information and do nothing with it until we're inspired to act. So what a great point to make. Paul McCusker here today, Senior Director of Creative Content for the Augustan Institute. And, you know, how much of the culture are you looking at to realize, you know, we need to write this because we're so, the culture is so counter-Christian, you know, counter to our Catholic faith?
And I think that's a big part of it. We try to write and create projects like this that we would call secular worthy, which means that even though it's coming from a Catholic perspective, it should be enjoyable as a story. The characters should be compelling as characters. And that's a big way that brings us in. If beauty is an attraction, good storytelling is an attraction, leading into the fact that with the separation of our culture from, let's say, our Judeo-Christian roots and a worldview, that we need more things like this to sort of shore up the faith and to even explore how do we hold the line on our faith when we're dealing with an increasingly antagonistic culture. Yeah. And how do we reach into that culture on behalf of the faith when it's antagonistic? We just can't assume we know this, we're not welcome to offer what we believe. So how do we do that? How are we evangelists in a time that is in many ways anti-evangelistic when it comes to Catholicism? Mm-hmm.
Paul, we have about 3 minutes left with you, and I want to ask you a question I often ask a guest when I'm hosting my Epiphany show on our affiliate station, and it really ties into everything that I do about having Epiphany moments. We have many of these throughout our lifetime. You know, they could be really profound, very subtle, where the Lord is really shining light on our life. Do you have an Epiphany moment you could share with our listeners here today?
Well, I think it was one of the most important in my, I've had a series, my journey into the Catholic faith, because I grew up Protestant and I grew up Baptist, and the steps that led me to the church were steps of stepping stones of a little epiphany moments. But I'll tell you where it started. There's no place in my life or no point when I didn't believe in God. I always did. I think I can credit my mom with this, but I always believed that through no merit of my own, God existed and he loves me. In a sense, he's on my side, and on my side doesn't mean with whatever I want to do. It just means he's there loving me even when I'm stumbling, even when I'm falling. He's there to pick me up. He's there to help. That cooperative nature of our salvation, which is even more real to me as a Catholic than it was as a Protestant, has been an epiphany, and it pervades. I think pervades the wrong word, but it's through everything that I'm writing. How do we get to know this God who loves us through Jesus even more? I think my whole writing career has been exploring that reality that was made a truth for me when I was. It was true when I was as young as it goes all the way back to the beginning. That he's there, he loves me. And that to me has remained sort of an epiphany all the time. Wow. That he is there and loves me and that Jesus died for me. These are, if I had to pick one, I would say that was it because everything else follows on from that.
Yeah. That's pretty powerful. A couple of minutes left with you. Any, what else do you want to share with our listeners about St. Augustine and the work that you're doing, Paul?
Well, I would point to, well, a little bit of everything that we're doing. I mean, the, for example, we have the Word of Life curriculum that we've developed. And it's funny because the World of Hope Springs, in many ways, came out of that curriculum. When they were developing this for elementary school and into junior high, I kept saying, well, this is all good teaching, but where are the stories? We need to tell stories that go along with this teaching to explore the topics. And so all of the Hope Springs stories initially came from that curriculum. And then, of course, we have Formed, which is our platform, which has lots of at-home teaching opportunities and the catechetical videos through church gathering, church groups get together and they watch the videos and they discuss them. And I've worked on a bunch of those as well. So what I love about where I work is all the creativity, that whatever we do is usually not conventional. We're always looking for the better way to do it and the more creative way to do it, either through the beauty of a visual and sound or just solid teaching by itself.
Paul McCusker, thank you so much for being with us here on Catholic Connection today. God bless you and all that you do.
Thank you.
Paul, Senior Director of Creative Content for Augustine Institute and their new children's series, Welcome to Hope Springs. We'll wrap up right after this. Thanks for tuning in here on EWTN Radio Extra. And thanks to Paul McCusker, Senior Director of Creative Content for the Augustine Institute, sharing with us about the new series, children's series, Welcome to Hope Springs, and so much more that they have going on at the Augustine Institute. And thank you for being with us. Coming up on Monday, T will be back in her host chair, and she'll be talking with Matt Swaim, sharing highlights from Journey Home, as she always does on a Monday. Father Jeff Kirby will join Teresa on the Lenten series. And as always, Gail Buckley-Berenger will be with Teresa on Monday to talk about her scripture verse of the week. And that's an important opportunity. You know, pull that verse. I like to pull that verse that she shares, and I kind of meditated on it every single day throughout the week and just kind of reflect on how what it means in my life and what I have going on. And just to remind you of tying back into my coach's commentary, we are honoring Mother Angelica on the 10th anniversary of her passing. And right now at this hour in the Vatican in Rome, there is a Mass being celebrated in her honor right now. So let's pray with her and for her and for EWTN as we honor Mother Angelica. And throughout the whole day, there'll be wonderful programming on Mother Angelica here on EWTN. So you want to catch it, and you always can catch programming on demand as well. I like to remind my listeners who tune in to always connect, communicate, and collaborate with your Catholic community. We are your Catholic radio station. Don't go away. There's more to come right here on EWTN.